This program is a production of Restoring the Core, an initiative designed to assist those wishing to go deeper into classic Christianity with resources available in a connected age, online at restoringthecore.com. This is Finding Hidden Treasure, episode 131. My new book, The Capsule, was released recently. The book is intended as a companion guide for how you approach your current devotional practices. The underlying theme of the book is how humanity's first voyages to the moon, over 50 years ago, contain insights which can be applied to your devotional life here on Earth. The book is available in paperback, ebook, and audiobook formats. It is available from a number of vendors, not only here in the United States, but also in Canada, the United Kingdom, Australia, Germany, as well as a variety of other countries. You can find the link to the platforms which carry the book by going to bookstoread.com/thecapsule. And that 2 is the digit 2. So it's books and then the digit 2, read.com/thecapsule. I'll also be providing the link in the show notes for this episode, as well as the webpage for this episode at restoringthecore.com. In the show notes and the webpage, I will also be providing a link to some sample chapters from the print book as well. In this episode, I'm providing a sampler from the capsule's audiobook. It is the entirety of Chapter 5 about the gift and privilege of reading. I hope you will find it to be of benefit to you. The Capsule, Chapter 5, Reading. Have you not read what was said to you by God? Matthew chapter 22, verse 31b. Imagine living in a culture in which information that doesn't reside in your own head exists only in the heads of others you know. In this hypothetical culture, consider an event such as a famine or earthquake which happened in your community years ago. Perhaps you witnessed the event, but if not, your knowing about it is reliant on someone else's memory. If it happened before you were born, you would either need to know someone who witnessed the event or know someone who heard an account of the event and passed it along orally from one generation to another. In such a world, your community's fund of collective knowledge is only as good as the memories of the people who were alive at the moment. The community would also need to develop ways of passing along information orally and accurately to the next generation to prevent distortion of those collective memories. Without such a method, knowledge that is important to the community, particularly historical knowledge, would become lost with the passage of time. Passing along knowledge orally has been a very important part of human history. However, it does have its limitations. Orally passed along knowledge is only as good as the way in which it is transmitted. Perhaps you're familiar with accounts of family stories which have been lost to time, such as prevented from getting passed along due to things such as a sudden untimely death or chronic memory issues. There's also a known tendency for oral accounts to become distorted over time. The telephone game provides a great example. A message is whispered from one player to the next. Part of the fun of the game is to see how different the original message is from what the last player says it is. The game is a good reminder of how information that is passed along orally can become distorted. Early in human history, people discovered the importance of having extrasomatic knowledge. The term comes from the Latin and simply means outside the body. The ability to record information on something other than a human brain is just a fancy way of describing the development of writing. Extrasomatic, that is, written information, must have a corresponding means by which the information can be decoded. Put rather simply, for writing to be useful, the corresponding skill of reading must be developed as well. For reading to be useful, you need to know such things as the characters used in writing, that is, an alphabet. You would also need to know how to interpret the combinations of letters in an alphabet into words used in a language you know. For example, if you see a sign that has the letters ORDINATEUR, you won't know what the sign is saying if you know English but don't know French. To an English-only reader, recognizing the letters in the word doesn't help you recognize that when those letters are combined in French, the word means computer in English. Having access to written information from across the centuries is truly a treasure and blessing to each generation. The New Testament was so cherished by the early church that an explosion of hand copying its texts occurred early in church history. Over 5,800 Greek language manuscripts of copies of the New Testament still exist today. Many of those copies are over 1,500 years old. Consider how many books have been sitting on shelves for years, or even centuries, awaiting a new audience to read and appreciate what they have to tell you. A world beyond your own. One of the wonderful benefits of reading is being able to tap into information that you might never have been able to come across yourself. Reading allows you to access information beyond your own experience, time, and place. It can give you a picture of what life was like for those in other times and places. Reading can give not only a sense of what life was like, but a sense of what was important to the writer and the people of that time. One way this has developed for me is in my love of history. When I'm traveling, I usually find my way to whatever historical museum happens to be nearby. In reading the panels that go along with the displays, I've often found references to books which point back to the conditions of the time. This was true when my wife and I visited Philadelphia several years ago. One museum we visited was the Mutter Museum, an institution which houses historical artifacts related to the development of medicine. One of the sections in the museum was dedicated to medical practices during the American Civil War. One display featured a collection of photographs from that era, compiled into a large poster. Among the photos was the cover of a book entitled The Soldier's Pocketbook. After getting back home, I found a digital copy on archive.org. As I read the book, it became evident that it had been distributed to newly enlisted Union Army soldiers. It was a Christian devotional book which dedicated a good amount of text to discussing the soldier's current role in life. It also discussed the very real possibility of facing death in battle. There was great comfort in how the author of this pocketbook, quite literally a book which could be carried in a pocket, reminded these soldier readers, "Make God your friend at all times, and he will not forget you when you are in peril." The soldier's pocketbook is an example of finding information that I would not have encountered otherwise. I've never served in the military. I do not know firsthand what it is like to go into a battle that I might not survive. Not only did those Civil War soldiers on both sides face possible death on the battlefield, they faced other possible horrors depending on the extent of their injuries. The treatment of battlefield wounds during the American Civil War era reflected the medical and surgical practices of the mid-19th century. Often soldiers ended up dying from battle wounds which could be easily treated today. Depending on the severity of a battlefield injury, these soldiers could also face the nightmare of a battlefield amputation, performed without anesthetic. Interestingly, Civil War non-battlefield-related deaths consistently outnumbered those due to battlefield injuries. The soldier's pocketbook is a glimpse into the spiritual mindset of those facing the very real horrors of war. As I know a bit about Civil War history, this book gave me insight into how those individuals faced life and death in troubling times. It provided me with a perspective on battlefield bravery that I've never encountered. Seeing with another's eyes. Reading can also give you insights from the thoughts, reflections, and experiences of others. These can come in a variety of genres. Biographies can give you a sense of the thoughts, experiences, and life circumstances of a given individual. Histories serve a similar role as a kind of biography, which includes a nation or people group. Books on philosophy show you the ideas that great thinkers have pondered and wrestled with over the centuries. Fiction allows you to explore ideas in places and times that existed in the imagination of the author. Books on theology can give you the heart and mind of those who have explored what is known of God based on the text of the Bible and what can be logically deduced from it. Crossing the aisle. The phrase crossing the aisle refers to when a politician seeks to cooperate with members of an opposing party to work for the greater good of their constituents. This kind of approach can also be useful in reading. It's easy to simply read the perspectives of those with whom you agree, be it politically, philosophically, religiously, or in one of 100 other different ways. It will definitely be a challenge to shift your approach to take the time to find out what those with whom you disagree think about a given set of ideas. You may pick up insights that might never have occurred to you. This approach is helpful in avoiding what is called naive realism, defined as a tendency toward holding two distinct mindsets in tandem. The first mindset is that you believe your view of the world around you is objective. The second mindset is believing that those who disagree with you are either uninformed, irrational, or biased. You will grow in your understanding if you have the courage to think that an ideological opponent may have some valuable insights for you to learn. This is not compromise. This doesn't require you to switch streams and adopt a new ideology. This approach will, however, allow you to grow in your knowledge and wisdom far more than staying in the echo chamber of reading only those with whom you agree. Simply different. Differences exist beyond ideology. A good way of describing these differences is found in a sermon that the Apostle Paul delivered to some curious residents of first century Athens. And he, God, made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place. Acts chapter 17, verse 26. These differences manifest themselves in ways such as gender, age, nationality, and culture. Read from those who are not like you. If you're a male, read the writings of a female author. If you live in the United States, read from someone who is not American. This can open up a sense of understanding that you would never experience otherwise. A time machine. One benefit of reading is being able to take in the insights of those who have gone on before you in depth. A book can act as a type of time machine. Through a book, insights, observations, and creative thoughts of a person from one era are not doomed to stay in the author's head and die with the author. Writing a book allows ideas to travel to the future, where a reader can be informed, inspired, and impacted years or even centuries later. One writer who impacted and still impacts me was the 17th century British minister Thomas Goodwin, 1600 through 1680. Goodwin was a pastor and a prolific writer. Michael Reeves writes of Goodwin, once ranked as a theologian alongside Augustine and Athanasius, even hailed as the greatest pulpit exegete, interpreter, of Paul that has ever lived, he should be a household name. His writings, while not easy, always pay back the reader. For in Goodwin, a simply awesome theological intellect was wielded by the tender heart of a pastor. Goodwin has been a hero to me. He ministered in London during the plague of 1665. He survived the Great London Fire of 1666, although unfortunately half of Goodwin's large personal library was lost to the fire. On a personal note, during my first trip to London, my wife and I visited the gravesite of Thomas Goodwin at Bunhill Fields. Though he died in 1680, Goodwin's writings, particularly his book, The Heart of Christ, have helped me to better understand the heart of love which Christ, while in heaven now, has for his people today. I can almost imagine Thomas Goodwin sitting at his desk, writing with quill and ink, the words which he would send into the future, words that many have read, including myself, over 3.5 centuries later. What Goodwin and other authors of the past have done for us is so similar to what the writer of the New Testament letter to the Hebrews says about Abel. And through his faith, though he died, he still speaks. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 4. Clearing up blind spots. Reading the writers of the past can help you avoid blind spots in your thinking. It can be helpful for preventing or curing you from being a chronological snob. Just as naive realists have a distorted understanding of their own views and the views of their ideological opponents, a chronological snob distorts the value of works produced today as compared to those of the past. This perspective believes that something produced now must be better than something produced in the past, for the simple reason it was produced now. It is the latest, therefore it must be the greatest. C.S. Lewis wrote about chronological snobbery in an introductory essay he penned for a printing of On the Incarnation by the 4th century bishop Athanasius. Lewis points out that people of every era have certain blind spots. Every age has its own outlook. It is specially good at seeing certain truths and specially liable to make certain mistakes. We all, therefore, need the books that will correct the characteristic mistakes of our own period. These are things which a society often overlooks and simply aren't recognized as problems at the time. The large-scale presence of slavery in pre-Civil War America would have been a blind spot for many in the United States of the 18th and 19th centuries. Our culture has blind spots today. The problem is that our culture is too close to the blind spots to recognize them as blind spots. You need the insights of those living in the past who didn't have those same blind spots as you to give you the insight you can only get from outside help. In this case, outside means outside your own time and place. Be wary of thinking that the latest is always the greatest. It might be. It might not. Reading in the capsule. Reading, of course, played an ongoing and pivotal role in the Lunar Explorer astronauts' Apollo mission, whose approach is modeled and applied in this book. The very nature of the mission required the skill of reading. The reading of procedure lists and other documents was standard operating procedure. The Apollo missions could not have succeeded without the literacy of those astronauts. However, there was one very special time of reading aboard an Apollo lunar mission which will be remembered as long as the history of spaceflight endures. It was on December 24, 1968, during humanity's first ever manned trip to the moon. Consider what the three men aboard the Apollo 8 capsule were facing that Christmas Eve. The challenges were of the kind that no traveler in space had ever encountered. Would their spacecraft's service module engine fire correctly within the next few hours to break them out of lunar orbit and send them on the correct return course back to Earth? Would their re-entry path into Earth's atmosphere be within the right parameters? The capsule, hurtling in from deep space, would need to encounter the atmosphere at just the right angle. Too thick? The capsule burns up. Too shallow? The capsule skips off the atmosphere back into space like a stone skipped on the surface of a pond. If that happened, those three astronauts would be stranded in space with no means of returning to Earth. Because so many aspects of the flight of Apollo 8 were being done for the first time, the astronauts believed that they had a 50-50 chance of returning to Earth safely. With all that as background, consider the message that the three astronauts wished to deliver to the people of Earth. Just wishing everyone a Merry Christmas would not do. During their live broadcast from the capsule of Apollo 8 that night, astronauts Frank Borman, James Lovell, and William Anders took turns reading from the opening verses of the creation account as found in the first chapter of the book of Genesis. Centuries earlier, King David, in praising God, wrote, "When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you care for him?" Psalm 8, verses 3 and 4. I suspect that King David would have marveled to know that the first three sons of man to visit the moon would read from the Genesis account to the largest live audience to ever hear a reading of Scripture. Takeaways. 1. See writing and reading for the marvels that they are. They free us from having knowledge trapped only in your mind or the minds of others. 2. Reading allows you access to information, ideas, and insights beyond the limits of your own experience, time, and place. 3. Use reading as a way to build up your empathy for others as you read the writings of those with whom you differ, ideologically, in gender, age, or culture. 4. The writings of those in the past are like a message sent to you in a time machine. They can offer insights for your present moment, often acting as means to see beyond the blind spots of your own time, culture, and place. Thank you for listening to this program. We can be contacted at mail@restoringthecore.com. We're on Facebook at www.facebook.com/restoringthecore. You can also follow us on Twitter at @restorethecore. Thank you for listening. We hope you will join us next time for Finding Hidden Treasure.